by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home and they hit you at school. They hate you if you're clever and they despise a fool. Till you're so fucking crazy you can't follow their rules. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. When they tortured and scared you for 20 odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. Keep you doped with religion and sex and TV. And you think you're so clever and classless and free. But you're still fucking peasants as far as I can see. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. There's room at the top, they are telling you still.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles.
You can't handle the truth.
I told my mind.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
We're live. Welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Jimmy on the board. S&P futures up 34. NASDAQ futures up 276. We're trying to bounce back from yesterday. The Fed came out with their announcement, and we were down a bunch and flew back to actually up a little bit. And the new guy started talking, and the other way. We had the Dow down 1,100. We had the S&P down 112. That's a lot. NASDAQ down 433. So we're trying to creep our way back from that. So far, we're creeping a little bit, certainly in the NASDAQ. So do we have Professor Liu?
Good morning.
How are you, bud?
I'm doing well and thankful this morning that I do not live in St. Mary's, Newfoundland. And there's no reason you should know where that is.
Well, unless, I know where Newfoundland is, but
sure. Unless, and have you been to Newfoundland?
I have not. I bet it's gorgeous.
I've been there. When I was escorting Soviet flights in and out of the United States, we would stop in St. John's and pick the airplane up. So St. Mary's, Newfoundland is this picturesque little coastal town. I think almost all the picturesque towns in Newfoundland are coastal. And they had a plant there that processed fish. And they had 110 tanks, each holding 3,000 gallons of fermented fish sauce.
Oh, God.
And it had been there for 20 years, Tom. The plant had shut down and been abandoned. And the sauce fermented in these tanks for 20 years. And, of course, they had vents on them.
What do you mean fermented? It's like it's alcohol buzzing away in there? Or?
Oh, it rotted. That's a polite way of saying it rotted.
Oh, God.
So 3,000 gallons times 110 is a lot of gallons of fermented, rotting fish sauce. And for 20 years, since the turn of the century, it has rotted in this storage facility, smelling up the entire area. And
what can you do with it? Dump it in the middle of the ocean or what?
They're in the process, apparently, of finally extracting it and getting rid of it. But I find it just an absolute craziness that the government of this province could not figure out a way to get rid of this stuff and basically force these people to live with this rotting fish smell for two decades. I'm also amazed that nobody went out there and engaged in some self-help, but I think at some point you're looking at this going, I'm just going to go burn those things.
Well, they don't have a railroad to get them out of there or anything, so the only place to take them is out to sea, and I'll bet some people were pissed at that.
Well, they could truck it. You could truck it out of there.
To where?
Drain the tanks and truck it out and dispose of it. I assume you could bury it, which is what I presume they're doing with it. But the idea that you have something like this sitting out there and these people,
God,
hey,
my family grew up next to the stockyard, so
okay,
you can only imagine.
Same deal. I was about to say if you go to Greeley, Colorado, there's a gigantic stockyard outside of Greeley, and when the wind blows in the right direction.
Wasn't that Montford of Colorado's plant there, too?
Yeah, I believe it is Montford.
Yeah.
But
it got bought by somebody.
Right. If the wind's blowing in the right direction, even in Denver, I mean, Greeley's, 60 miles away.
Yeah.
Even here in Denver, you can smell it. And when I was flying out of Offutt Air Force Base at Omaha, there was a rendering plant, stockyard rendering plant, because Omaha used to have huge stockyards. There was a stockyard rendering plant that was south of the base, and when the wind blew in the right direction, you could smell all the renderings that were going on with the cattle and the remnants of the cattle, and they're burning them or whatever they did with them down there. So
we were southwest of the back of the yards, and most of the time the wind would come from the southwest, but then, boy, if it ever came from the northeast, it was rough. I was only there when we were kids. It closed then. Yeah, probably.
Well, yeah, I mean, Chicago had an actual stockyard in it as well, right?
It was the biggest one in the world.
Yeah,
and if you look at a railroad map of Chicago, every railroad had a way to get to the stockyards. Illinois Central came up the east side. If you go down the Dan Ryan, you'll see these railroad bridges. Or if you take the Rock Island, you'll see bridges above you. Those were tracks that got you to the 42nd Street over into the yards. There's every train had a way to get there. I mean, because whether it was meat out of there or something out of there, or whether it was
the animals going in,
and it was, for years. And everybody worked there. My uncles worked there. My great great uncle got killed there in an electrical zap, and it was a massive deal. That's where what's his name wrote the book, the jungle,
yeah, by Sinclair.
Yeah, and and you'll go by there. The church, there's a church, and just east of Halsted, big old Catholic church, and that's where the priest gave sanctuary to the Union leaders in the basement. It was the amount of history that was there. And there was a place called the Stockyard Inn. It was a hotel there, believe it or not, with a big steakhouse in there. And I remember going to Bulls games at the amphitheater. As a matter of fact, the, the 1958 auto show my grandfather took me to was in the amphitheater.
Yeah,
that's where the 68 convention was.
The processing of animals, huge part of industry in the Midwest. Minnesota had that. Well, still does has a huge animal processing town, basically, in southern Minnesota. Omaha and Nebraska was a gigantic stock place for processing animals, and there were any number of outstanding steak places that used to be there that were the remnants of when cattlemen used to come in there.
Well, they moved from really Chicago to Omaha, and then went somewhere from there. I don't think it's in Omaha anymore either.
No, those places are gone. Every year, and Denver, which is rapidly transforming into a California town, or even worse, an Oregon town. Denver still has a stockman's parade. You know, they've got the remnants of their stockyard on the north side of the town, and every January, I think it is, we have the stockman show here, and it's morphed into sort of a more of a Western sort of business type show, but they still drive cattle down the main street of Denver. It goes right by our offices here. They drive about 50 to 100 cows.
Wow.
Get them in the street and herd them. Guys riding the horses, and they take them down the street.
Well, if you I'm always been kind of curious as the Chicago's history. I mean, not as much as Mr. Flanagan probably, but was always pretty good on the water management piece, because that's essentially history of Chicago is a history of water management because of the topography. And the turn of the, whatever it was, I think it was the turn of the 19th century, Chicago had like 300,000 people. But because of the stockyards and because of the tanning facilities on the north side, Chicago had basically more sewage to deal with than any other city in the world, including London, which had like 3 million people.
Yeah.
Because basically cows poop a lot in the tanning. I mean, it was the amount of, that's why you had to reverse the river, that's why all kinds of stuff. I mean, you could never have taken care of the sewerage here without doing something dramatic. And
well, that's why they dug the sanitary canal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And the interesting part was that the city, the Chicago River, used to flow into the lake. Okay, well, at one point, but it's really a prairie stream. It really wasn't a river. And in the sense, it's like the Mississippi. It's going to have, a 6-mile-an-hour current or something. It was a prairie stream, and it didn't move very fast. So when you dumped everything in there, even though it flowed into Lake Michigan, it kind of didn't flow very far. So you end up putting the cribs for drinking water out like a mile in the lake. But it's the weird thing, maybe people won't hear this, but there's two watersheds within like a mile of each other. The Splains River runs essentially just west of the city, and it flows in the Illinois River. It and the Kankakee make the Illinois, sort of like the Monongahela and whatever the other one make the Allegheny make the Ohio, and they flow down to the Mississippi and New Orleans, basically. And well, then just east of that is the Lake Michigan watershed, which has the Chicago River in it. Well, unless you had a really good eye, you almost couldn't tell where one was the other. It's actually in a place called Summit, and there's a divide there. It's not like the Continental Divide in Colorado, but there's a divide. It was kind of a lake that went through to both of them called Mud Lake. Well, the problem is if you had a whole lot of rain, the Des Plaines River would overflow essentially into the Chicago River zone, which would cause the Chicago River to like belch out into the lake more than it ever normally did, and that's when you had your cholera epidemics and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But real quick, Lou, the thing that people do, I was listening to this YouTube thing when they were digging the process to dig the Chicago River to go the other way was really the precursor to Panama Canal. A lot of stuff they learned here is what they did down there. But they were digging by where the Kingsbury Bridge, that one is just on the near north side?
Yeah.
Underneath the Kingsbury Bridge, they found some stone tablets and stuff that were a hint of a very earlier civilization here, like, you know, thousands of years before anybody thought anybody was here, including the Indians, and essentially put them in storage someplace, and nobody can find them. Sort of like, you know, the Raiders of the Lost Ark. And it was decreed by the powers to be that you can't mention any of this stuff because it might stop production, and we might actually have to stop and say this is a real memorial site. And they just, nobody knows where they are, but they went through all the engineering logs and stuff, and they were there, and they were trucked in. The marble was trucked in from like northern Wisconsin, sort of like, you know, where did we get the Egyptian stones, or where did we get the stuff from?
Stonehenge.
Stonehenge. And pretty amazing stuff. Hey, I've asked several opinions. I guess the Fauci was being...
That was quite a show, wasn't it?
Well, I was hearing about it because we were doing a lot of trade, and we had a bunch of our stocks had earnings, but I keep asking my buddy Bill, who I saw last night because he met a friend of his, and anyway... He's not feeling so hot, so I help him get back and forth. But I said, Bill, what is the story? I mean, I have people on the show that rant and rave that once you get a pardon, he said, you can't take the Fifth. And they're absolutely convinced of this. And Bill said, you know, when I was younger, I did some research on this. He says, I'll have to dig it up, and I'll send it to you. He goes, the whole thing is getting confused because the whole definition of a pardon used to be you were at least charged with something or convicted of something. You got pardoned for something. He said, it seems like they're confusing a blanket pardon with really a declaration of immunity.
Yes.
And he goes, it's really screwing the whole thing up because Fauci was never charged with a crime. So in fact, he was pardoned
starting in 2014 for anything he did starting in 2014. Yeah.
And Bill says that you've essentially screwed up the whole definition of the term. So now when you start talking about what follows afterward, it gets pretty murky because there's no crime. Plus, he says, you're not, just because you're pardoned from a federal crime, it doesn't mean the state can't come after you. So you still have the Fifth in that regard.
That's correct.
So he goes, the answer is, I don't really know. And I'll go back and look at my research, but in today's world, these guys are making it up as they go along.
There are some really interesting elements here, and I don't know whether this will get pushed to the Supreme Court, but it's an opportunity to make some really interesting law with this guy. So the first thing we go is whether the pardon itself, which was Otto Penn signed, not signed by Biden, but Otto Penn signed, whether the pardon itself is valid, because there is a significant amount of doubt whether Biden authorized the signing, even authorized it. His mental state, coupled with the fact that this was all being done en masse, that we know, for example, that he was, his authorization to pardon a number of people was not based on an individual assessment of each person's case, but a group bulk decision that was presented to him and said, hey, these guys with this kind of issue should be pardoned, and he said, yeah, go ahead and do it, and then they put
what was the issue on the form. What was the issue?
In one case it was a group of people that were involved in some kind of drug offenses, low-level drug offenses. In other cases, I think the category of people that they brought to him was people we think are likely to be prosecuted by the incoming administration for what they did. And, you know, it would include, that's all we know right now, which is why this whole thing is formatted out into,
if you and I were president for a day, I would get a bunch of people, I would take a look at this pardon thing in the Constitution, and I'd define it. I mean, look what Trump's doing. Between the two of them, I mean, yes. they've totally butchered the whole thing.
And of course, Trump just says, listen, I saw what you did, and I watch this. You know, hold my beer. So in any event, as far as I know, Trump has not done what Biden did in terms of blanket pardons, and again, they also the pardons also involved not just backward looking kinds of things, but forward looking, you know, basically pardoning people for things they might do, you know, as long as
How different is this from what Ford did for Tricky Dick? There was no crime, and there never was a.
Well, there were specific. Oh no, there were specific high crimes and.
Well, there were allegations
that Nixon could have been charged with.
But that's what I mean. He could have been, but he wasn't.
Well, right. So he was. You know, they pardoned. Ford pardoned that. You know, that action, and they had very specific things with Nixon that they were looking at. I don't think anybody's ever defined exactly what Fauci did, except for the perjury. And you know, he clearly perjured himself in terms of his statements to Congress when he testified in front of Paul's committee a couple of years ago. So. There are a number of angles here. So the auto pen signature, the bulk decision making or group decision making in terms of the pardoning decision, the failure to charge the guy for anything, you know, but he's pardoned anyway, like some kind of crazy get out of jail free card. All of this, I think, is subject to a legal challenge, and could be litigated down the road. So they're going to go after him for contempt of Congress. So clearly a lot of what they were questioning him about, which he refused to answer, was not an appropriate invocation of the Fifth Amendment.
Well, here's my
like what day is today and what color is your tie? You know, he invoked the Fifth Amendment on those questions. So he was clearly not invoking the statute properly, or not invoking the amendment properly. That's contemptuous. He refused to answer. So if they want to go after him for contempt of Congress, they can.
Well, here's my South Side take on all this. And I talked to some people last night, and of course, you know, some of the people that are more liberal, what are you doing? COVID's over. Let the guy alone. You don't need Rand Paul on TV that much more.
Yeah, let's move on. The greatest public policy disaster, one of the greatest public policy disasters in the last, you know, 50 years, but let's move on.
Well, I mean, I am, as you probably can tell, I'm not necessarily in that camp, but I sent that thing out to you guys yesterday. If we're going to do it, and I think Rand Paul, you know, whatever you think of the guy, there's no way on earth that he wants to skewer Fauci and probably some sort of a Democratic thing in there to invoke Biden or whatever. I don't know if that's his motivation.
Well, I think he, as a doctor, wants public health people's heads to roll.
Right, but he's not about to take it. I don't know if you read the thing I sent you. He's not about to take it to where he's not going to do a Sam Irwin or a Dan Inouye, wherever it goes, he has the balls to take it. He's not going to take it to Merck, or if they're involved. He's not going to take it to any of the drug companies. He's not going to take it to the people who gave the money. He's not about to go.
How do you know?
He doesn't have. In order to do that, I think you need the president on your side. I think you need a. He needs to be named the guy. He needs to be named Sam Irwin. He needs to be named, and I don't think they're going to do that. If they want to, fine. But I'm saying. I'm having trouble communicating this week, Lou, for some reason. I'm all for it, only if it's the real deal. Are we willing to go after the CIA if they ponied up the money? Are we willing to go all those different areas? I don't think we are.
I am perfectly happy to start with the government and work my way down.
You are.
Through the government officials. Okay. Well, I mean, this is
you are and I am, but I'm saying, are they... Or is this a 2-day grandstanding thing for
I will take as much exposure of this whole process as I can get, and if they can't, if all that happens is we put Fauci on a pedestal and expose him for what he is and for what he did, along with his co-workers, and we expose those people, and we show how badly corrupted our public health programs are, we reveal the decision making that basically and totally unnecessarily shut our economy down. If we expose the vaccine, the basis of these vaccine mandates and those decisions, so that people understand this is what a government did, then I'll take it. You know, I don't need to see Pfizer raked over the coals if we can't get to them. I'm perfectly happy just to see the government.
See, I'm
malfeasance if I'm exposed.
If I'm going to do it, as I said yesterday, I'm going to just the difference in our personalities. I'm going to start with the money. The places, there were five of these places, or six in Ukraine, and there was one in China. Okay, somehow or another, Obama had some sort of a. The Department of Defense said they didn't want to do it, allegedly, and Obama had a executive order saying he didn't want to do it. Okay, so
you're talking about the gain of function research.
And all of a sudden, these guys did it anyway. All right, so somebody signed the lease in Ukraine. Somebody sent the money to Wuhan. Where did the money come from? Did it come from a check from the Treasury Department? Well, how the hell did that happen? Or did it come from some CIA secret account someplace? Okay, who's in charge of that? I mean, I want it to go all. If I'm going to go, I'm going to go.
Here's what my understanding is, and I heard Kevin say that there's a CIA connection in there. I'm sure it's some level of intelligence gathering there. That's likely. But my understanding, and having again, I have more than a passing familiarity with this whole thing, because I litigated all this back in the early aughts over another mandatory vaccination program involving Fauci's people.
Well, I'm not, as you know, I'm no fan of the man.
I know, no. But my understanding is that Fauci controlled a tremendous amount of discretionary money as the head of this vaccine and infectious disease operation and a contagious disease operation. And it was one of the reasons why there was so little criticism of him. And the criticism of him was quickly tamped out because he was the money man. And so you're right about that.
But it also came down to he was the scientist. You believe the scientists or not, and he was the scientist you're supposed to believe, and it turns out he was not the scientist you want to believe.
He was a bureaucrat.
Yeah.
He's always been a bureaucrat. I mean, he has some science background, obviously.
Well, Russell said yesterday that his wife, when she first became a nurse or whatever, worked with him, and everybody thought he was a god.
I think he has, well, he certainly burnished that reputation, but I think when I encountered him and when I encountered his operation, he was solidly into the bureaucracy.
Okay,
and that was his special skill.
It is
was
funny
controlling money.
Isn't it funny how you and I, even though I think we have the same goal here, go at it totally. I want to know how the hell the money got through North Carolina. I want to know if the board approved it. I want to know if the president approved it. Did they even know what they were approving? Did they write the check? What the bleep? How the hell could they do something like that? I mean.
That's all part of it. Rip that scab off.
What about the seven companies? And I only because I'm not saying the Biden group didn't take money from people, but Trump is famous for it. The seven companies that we paid all that money for all the doses before they even got approved, we gave them millions
and
millions.
Warp speed, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, did they contribute to Fauci? Did they contribute to Trump? How did they get involved in it? And five or six of them were never even approved. They just got the dough. They never even came up with a vaccine.
Yeah, well, that was that plan was approved by Congress.
Yeah, so I'm saying if we're really going to go down this road, there's going to be a couple people. It's not just going to be Fauci. There's going to be a few people fall around him.
That's fine.
I think it's very fine.
If we get there, but I'm not as interested in that because that springs from a much more malign process, and that is the fact that you had the head of this program, who was controlling all this money, who had set up and knew he had set up this operation in China, and knew or believed instantly when that outbreak occurred, believed that it was coming from a lab that he had funded and that he had directed stuff to.
And expand on that a little bit. This is so unconscionable, Lou. I can't even. Well, but I hope there's a worse. Ring in hell for the guy. I really do.
It gets yeah. worse. He then set up a mechanism to deliberately deceive the government, the people he was working for, the leadership, so that they would not find out that it was him and his minions who had purchased all this stuff.
And
programmed it.
That's what I want. You know, actually, I wouldn't mind. I actually don't have a problem with Rand Paul, to be honest with you. So what I'd like to see is Trump, you know, act normal for a day and say, you know, this is a real big deal and it's going to go anywhere. I would like to give Rand Paul, if he's the best guy for the job, give him the Sam Irvin Watergate investigation kind of power. I wouldn't mind seeing that at all.
Well, they have that. Congress has that kind of power.
It's still not the same as. I mean, Harry Truman was able to go after people stealing on war contracts only because Roosevelt had his back. It's hard to do it on your own if you're in the Congress. I'm just saying. It just seems to me to be hard to do on your own.
I would love to have this ventilated through the president. But I suspect that the president's advisors, who are political people after all, are telling him, look, your fingers are in this pie because of Operation Warp Speed, and this happened on your watch. This was your guy, I mean, your administration. The better to let Rand Paul tear this guy apart than have you on the periphery of it because you know, you were making the decisions. He was advising you, and he was advising you improperly. But this is a complicated issue. Let the Congress sort it out. You got a war to run.
There's the idea that this guy.
I'm guessing that's the advice.
The only thing I'm disagreeing with you, and actually Carl a little bit too, I don't think, even though he was like the epicenter of this, I don't think he was alone on these decisions, Lou. I think
you don't think he was alone.
Fauci. That somehow he was that. The you know, the drug company, somebody was influencing him from somewhere. You know Washington way better than I do, but it's hard for me to imagine anybody in a position making these kinds of moves all on their own.
I can absolutely imagine that.
Okay.
Because this is you got to remember the organization we're dealing with. The whole point of this is remember Oliver North?
Yeah.
Okay. So North, remember how much authority North ended up having with Iran-Contra and how that program was being run?
Well, yeah.
And the reason for it was that he was willing to step up and say, I'll take responsibility. Fauci was that guy because he was empire building. So Fauci steps in and says, I am the science. I'm making the call.
Well, how do you, for weeks, tell people... You know, let's put it this way. I learned from some really good people on this show, but I'm just a schmuck. And yet, we had two or three of these outbreaks in the decades before, and our people, I mean, the world's people, the scientists, the one thing that outbreak, and within like two or three days, Lou, they knew it came through camels. And something else...
You're talking about SARS or...
Well, we knew where it came from, and all of a sudden... They can't find this at this market for like weeks. I'm going, I don't know, but it didn't come from this market. If it did, we'd have found it by now.
Well part of it was the fact that it was China, which instantly shut down any inquiries that might.
Because they
knew
what happened. They knew what happened.
So you know my theory, right? It was the wet market, but it was the wet market. Because it was the wet market where they were selling lab animals. There were a number of prosecutions in China.
Really?
In the 5 years preceding what happened at Wuhan, there were a number of prosecutions in China for people selling lab animals that they were experimenting on in these bioweapons facilities. The animals would die, and because they were experimenting on civets and bats and other creatures, which were considered delicacies, the people in the lab were taking the carcasses of these dead animals that they'd experimented on and selling them in those wet markets.
I think somebody in a lab just got it.
Well, it could be, but it's a very easy thing to think that some guy took an animal. That's why they were sitting spitting out. Well, it's a pangolin, or it's a civet, or it's a bat. There may well have been some truth in that if you consider the fact that the lab had terrible protocols, security protocols. Somebody took a sick animal, a dead carcass that had been infected with this stuff and sold it in the wet market.
Do you remember I sent you, I was somebody, one of the listeners from like London or someplace sent this to me, and I sent it to you guys, God, how many years ago was this? It had to do with the Chinese, let's put it this way, how can I even say this, Lou? This guy is an expert on, I'll use the term Chinese bullshit, and he can read through the political stuff.
He can read between the lines, right, of the Chinese press releases.
Yeah, remember that thing I sent you where he says that the Chinese will have a press release and they'll take it to a plant, and in the margin they'll scribble by hand what they actually want you to do or something.
Yes.
Somebody hired him. Was it the Trump administration? Somebody had hired this guy to actually go through all the Chinese documents that he could find and find out what they were up to. And he found a secret trip there from like for like 10 of the major party people all went to Wuhan. And so if you put it all together, they knew they had a real problem like right away before they ever admitted to it. And people were dying like right and left over there, evidently. And they had the.
I remember
the crematoriums were going 24/7. This guy went through. Yeah, if you look at this document and you look what's in the margin, I'm sitting there reading. God, how do you become an expert at something like that?
So that story, I do recall that story. And, again, all consistent with a lab leak, and the wet market story that I just related is a lab leak story as well. What is, again, we now know because Fauci wrote it in his journal on his government computer. he was almost 100% sure it was a lab leak, but he didn't, because the lab leak would have pointed back to his funding efforts. He killed the story, and he used his grant authority to effectively threaten, intimidate, and bribe people to change their stories and change the version of events so that the story that he was supporting was going to get play. And again, his role, because he was not a Trump supporter, and because he contradicted what Trump was saying early on, he became the hero of the press. It's like that lawyer, what was his name, Avenatti?
Yeah.
Michael Avenatti. I mean, you had people fainting, women fainting over him.
Lou,
what a wonderful guy he was, just because he was opposing Trump.
Could you, it's probably the only one who can, give somewhat of a history, I'll use the term, of this kind of stuff. I remember a movie, you ever see the movie Fräulein Doktor?
No, I don't think so. Was it German porno film?
Close. actually, no. It was set in World War One. It had to do with chemical warfare and how this lady was this doctor and double secret doctor, and she, as World War One advanced in the gas world, the chemical gas world, and people had all these these huge face masks with the charcoal on their side and breathe the air through there and everything. Well, she was inventing something that went through the skin, and those things, that stuff wouldn't work. And I remember seeing the film, I'll never forget, where they threw a bunch of dogs in this thing and they killed the dogs instantly. And I'm like, loving dogs that I do. But can you give me some kind of a history, give us, some sort of a brief history in chemical slash biological warfare. We have sort of always been involved somehow, only because the other guy was doing it first and we had to keep up, if you believe that bullshit. But it's always been sort of under the table, kind of half-ass funded. Nobody wants it in the middle of the University of Chicago. Nobody wants it. I mean, what has been kind of the clandestine history of this really since World War One? Has it always been done in other countries? Are you always trying to get other people to do it so we can say we're not doing it? I mean, this can't be new, the way this was done.
So, modern biological warfare. So we've always had biological
warfare. Start with chemical warfare. Where were those plants?
Well, I mean, they used to, remember that we used to use catapults to fling infected animal carcasses into medieval cities.
Yeah,
you know, so the there's a great Monty Python sketch on that in the Holy Grail where they shoot a cow.
Didn't the British swing smallpox blankets at the Indians?
British brought in some cases smallpox infected blankets because they realized that the Indians had no natural immunity to it. That was directed against certain tribes, and at that point, by that time, we had either immunity or vaccinations. I can't remember whether Jenner had done his research by then, but we knew how to immunize roughly people against it. The whole issue of biological weapons and research, of course, is that they're insanely dangerous. Because if you develop an effective one, it kills everybody, or it affects everybody, and you can't control the release. Chemical weapons and biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons all fall under the rubric of weapons of mass destruction because they are indiscriminate. When you release them, they go and kill or affect everybody without being directed one way or another, or incapable of being directed one way or another. So biological weapon research really consisted of, you know, immunizing your troops against cholera, plague, whatever that was gonna develop on the battlefield in an effort to try to avoid getting a large portion of your people sick. We really didn't start seeing weaponizing that stuff until we got into, you know, breaking down genes and chromosomes so that we could actually engineer viruses and engineer.
We had chemical weapons plants here way back.
We did, but I'm talking about biological now. So biological.
I'm sort of the same. We sort of transferred from one to the other.
Right. So chemical weapons are a whole different.
Well, my question is, did we ever come clean and walk in front of Congress and say, here's a bill to fund our chemical weapons stuff because we know the Russians are doing it? Was it ever that out in the open, or we always somewhere in the back?
Always, that stuff, those things are always black programs.
Well, that's what I mean.
That kind of research, you really don't want your opponents knowing what you're doing on that.
So this isn't the first time us sneaking this money to Wuhan and the places in Ukraine that somebody here has done something like that.
Well, I don't know about sneaking money to foreign governments. I mean, we were funding operations in Ukraine, apparently.
What were those?
But
I don't
know about that. I do know that we have a very, very highly classified, very secure facility at Fort Detrick, Maryland, that houses our biological weapons research area.
Well, that's why one of my questions was on the places in Ukraine, which I think we probably get a better handle on. Who's sending the lease? The CIA, us, did we rent it? Did we buy it? Or is it the Ukraine government?
I'm almost certain it was done through some combination of DOD and FDA type funding and research. So that, if you want to track sort of an unclassified aspect of the biological weapons program, look at the vaccination research facilities. And vaccine research facilities,
okay,
and what they're doing, that stuff tends to be less classified, and if you look at how that stuff was funded in the case of anthrax, for example, that was funded through grants coming from DOD and from FDA, and the Michigan Department of Public Health.
Right. If you're some stooge representative reading the bill, would you know that's what it was, or is it somehow classified as something else?
Well, in the case of anthrax, it was a naturally occurring disease that we want to inoculate people against, you know, veterinarians and livestock handlers and things like that. So that program was out in the open. I mean, we knew who it was. There was only one place producing an anthrax vaccine. It was in Michigan, and it was run through the Michigan Department of Public Health. Actually, the Department of Agriculture.
All right, so that was legit. And if you're a congressman, you'd say we're sending money to this place, and here's why.
So the question would be, are we doing research on it? And now, you know, that's out there. Finding DOD's funding for it might be a little harder, because again, we don't want our opponents knowing that we are in fact taking an interest in this stuff. So, vaccination efforts, all that stuff on things like tularemia or Ebola or
all that stuff would be hidden. All right, so it's somebody's job somewhere to say, this is what we're going to do, Chief. You're good with numbers. We need this money here. We don't want anybody to know about it. You get it there. Somebody's job is to get the money to the place, to check the cash and not bounce and come out of some account. Somebody's job is to do that.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. It.
And Fauci couldn't do that. I mean, he. I don't think.
I don't think we know exactly what his connections were. I know that.
I'd love to find out, wouldn't you? I'd love to find out.
Well, I know that on the anthrax stuff, he, FDA, the National Institute of Health, his organization, the Infectious Diseases Group, FDA, Food and Drug Administration, and DOD were working hand in glove. So it's quite likely that there were funding sources coming from FDA, which had an interest in it, coming from the Department of Agriculture, which had an interest in it, coming from DOD, which had an interest in it. And it's quite possible that money was flowing from all of those places. And again, the way this works is somebody makes a decision up the food chain, and in this case, it was the Secretary of Defense who made a decision, we are going to engage in an anthrax inoculation program because we believe anthrax is a likely bioweapon that we're going to see. So we're going to engage in a vaccination program. Bang. The minute he makes that call, you have five or six federal agencies who have people in them that sit up and say, you know what? I can get funding for my program now that this anthrax thing is going. I can get funding for my program. And they put their hands out. They go to these agencies. They go, in this case, because it was the SecDef, they went to DOD and said, we can help you with this, but we need money. And DOD says, okay, let's apportion out X amount of money on this program. And DOD goes to FDA and says, what do we need to do to make sure this is good? And FDA says, well, we'll need this amount of funding on these administrative initiatives. It's incredibly labyrinthine and Byzantine.
I'm asking you this because I have this bizarre thing about money, as you know. it is so parallel. It was way back in the 2008 fiasco, you know, with everything falling apart and banks being, like, taken over every weekend. We were, my brother and I, Mesro, we used to go through Mesro, and they had all their big correspondents were out in this thing in New York, or Washington. We were in the hotel right behind the White House. That was the name of it, Hayes Healy or Hayes Adams or something. What a neat place that is. That's where all the people from the White House go drink in the basement there, because they're right across the street. If something happens,
I've been in there.
Yeah, so anyway, we're giving it, and this lady, she's running for office again. Is it Melissa Bean, Jimmy? Something Bean from the North Side. And she was, and I never do this, Lou, but I did that night. I was the ass in the class, right? I raised my hand and I go, I know your politics a little bit. I said, I know you would rather have more banks than less. And she goes, yeah. I said, but like every weekend now, we're seeing two, three banks getting taken over. And we're seeing, you know, somebody the new bank paying, you know, seemingly $50 for three locations and five drive-ins. And, oh, by the way, the Fed is eating the bad loans of the new place. And it's going, you know, and all of a sudden the bad loans of the old place, the new place gets a clean balance sheet. And all these facilities were like, not a hell of a lot. I said, how do I get in that loop? And she looks at me like I'm from Mars. I said, but second question, which I know I shouldn't do, do you, and I know you don't want anything bad happening. I said, do you sit with a few people on the other side of the aisle like once every couple months and review all these things? I mean, you're writing a check for $40 million. I mean, how do you know somebody's not paying somebody off or somebody's not sitting on anybody's lap? She looks at me like I got, she goes, Why would we ever review something like that? And I go, I'm like, why wouldn't you? It's sort of the same thing. I mean, does anybody ever ask the question, I guess, is the question of the day for me. I mean, does anybody say, wow, this, where did this check come from? Or, I mean, what can a lower-end guy in the Defense Department, how much can he, as you know, in your law firm, everybody's, you probably get to write a check for $5,000, but if it's $10,000, the chairman has to approve, or it's $20,000. The board's got to. Is there anything like that in the government? I mean, or
So I'm gonna point you in the direction of Minnesota. How many hundred million or billions of fraud flowed out of that state? How many times did they intercept Somali guys walking out of the airport with $10,000 in cash in $10,000 increments?
Well, I mean, again,
people knew about it. Tom, did somebody check? Well, no.
But is it, and nobody ever checks any of this stuff?
I don't know about any of it, and he ever checks it, but the short answer is that as long as this approval's going through, you people say, okay, fine, it's been authorized, we're good to go.
Well, I can't believe anybody can just write checks like that at any level of government without anybody keeping an eye on it. But
oh, come on, Tom.
I'm saying,
how many audits has DOD passed? How many audits has DOD passed?
When I say I can't believe, I believe it's happening. Obviously, it is. I can't believe that somehow it's. I mean, isn't that what Harry Truman made a career out of, going back and finding all this stuff
when he was and so is J.D. Vance right now, at least with regard to the programs that he's looking at. The short answer is these are questions nobody wants asked.
I do.
And I hearken back to that famous line in Chicago from I think it was one of the federal judges up there who just passed away recently, this the barn burner, who goes in to you know, in his early political days, goes into some, you know, union shop and says, you know, I'm here on behalf of so and so, and somebody goes, who sent him? And somebody goes, nobody. And the lead guy, the head guy goes, nobody don't want nobody that nobody sent.
No, we don't want nobody nobody sent.
We don't want nobody that nobody sent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got a couple of double negatives there you got to turn around.
Well, my point is that people look at this, the way people look at this money is not like the way you look at it. You don't look at it. We look at it as somebody, you know, that's somebody's
it's
cash.
It's your dough. Somebody, it's my dough.
Some taxpayers' dough. And the people in power, after they've been there for a while, don't look at it that way. They look at it as, we're entitled to this money, and if you start asking too many questions about where it's coming from or where it's going, we're not going to get it. So don't ask the questions.
Well,
and if you do ask the questions, if you're some GS-8,
yeah, the only problem with that, Louis, is
you're not going to be employed for
long. The only problem with that is we're broke. Don't you think it's time to turn that bus around a little?
I don't. I mean, I agree with you, but I'm all in favor of cutting.
I'm just wondering what the process is, and I have a feeling, like you say, this stuff is double secret. Okay, and it has been for a long time. We're getting back to the bio stuff. Okay, I mean, how much exactly is double secret in the government?
Let me tell you how secret this is. So, this again comes out of my anthrax litigation. Gulf War I, we mobilize our troops at the, and you go through what's called the mobility processing line, and in the line you're handed equipment, your records are checked, and you're given vaccinations for the location to which you're going to. All right, you have a shot record, that you carry with you as part of your medical documentation. Everybody has one. Everybody had one. They may have digitized it now, but back in the day, it was paper. You had your shot record. And so Gulf War One, you line up and you get stuck. And in the course of getting injections
this is Bush One. Yeah.
In the course of getting these injections, you hand over your shot record and they annotate it. Well, there were a lot of shots, and a number of them were not annotated on the shot record of service members by design. And the reason for that was we were inoculating people with a experimental, unlicensed mix of drugs that were anti-nerve agent, anti-anthrax, and anti...
How do you have an anti-nerve agent drug? My God.
I'm sorry?
Did it work, the anti-nerve agent thing?
Well, we never found out, but it was an anti-nerve agent.
How do you test it?
Well, you test it on animals.
Okay.
So these guys were given these shots, but they were not annotated on their shot record. The reason for that was that if they were captured with their shot records, we were afraid that the Iraqis and whoever else we were going up against would say, look, they're planning on using biological or chemical weapons because they're inoculating their people against them. And so
you might make that conclusion if you were them.
But in the meantime, you end up with a bunch, hundreds of thousands of guys who have been inoculated with stuff that you don't know what it is, and you can't tell if they got inoculated, and you can't tell what the impact of the inoculations are.
Well, just because it's not on their card.
When Gulf War syndrome rolls out in 5 or 6 years later, the immediate reaction on the part of the service members was, I got stuck with something that made me sick, and we can't prove it.
Okay.
And we can't show it.
I'm incredulous here, because when you and I were young, well, you're still young, we didn't carry a thing around in our pocket saying we had gotten our smallpox vaccination or this shot or that shot.
No, your family doctor had that.
He had all that. So just because these guys didn't have it, that's no excuse for the Defense Department not knowing what they gave them or not having a record of it.
Why would the Defense Department want a record of it?
Because they gave it to somebody like a doctor, for God's sake.
We don't want any records of this. You asked me how secret this stuff was. This is how secret it was.
I don't see how you could ever give somebody a shot at something and not know you did.
I promise you that happened.
I'm sure you're right. I'm just saying, my God.
Okay, I see Wayne in the right. In the pipeline here. I'll leave you on that.
Are you guys still getting rain, or what are you doing out there? You drying?
No, it's raining. It's not, the drought's still in here, but the fire danger is going down a little bit. We're getting regular rain across the state.
We had a storm here this week that was unbelievable. But a few months ago, Audrey talked to a guy who put up her fence, right, and there was a little damage to that thing. The guy said the storm like 6 weeks ago, you got 1,000 calls to come repair fences the next day.
We're not there yet. We're just getting rain now. The big issue for us is mudslides in the burn scar area. So I see Andrew. I see Wayne.
All right,
you guys have a great weekend. Take care.
SP futures up 46. NASDAQ futures up 375. We're trying to make up for yesterday. Guys, how are you?
Very well. How are you?
All right.
You survived the storm. I take it. I saw some video of it. It was horrendous.
I've been sitting in the same spot here doing the show and managing money for many years. The view of the post office, and we've had, storms come by. It was like the middle of night. I've never seen a middle of the day that dark here.
Yeah, it looked like down on the highway along the lake, somebody had a camera on. It looked like it was like in the middle of the night.
Yeah, but it wasn't just the rain, the wind. It was whipping against his window here, so fast.
Yeah.
We ended up with 3.5 inches of rain downtown in like an hour and a half, which I've never. Then it came by later in the same day, more south, but every one is preceded by like the 65-mile-an-hour wind gust.
Oh yeah, yeah. I saw some clips where some patio furniture the people living up on these high-rise condos, the furniture took off. And I was thinking, gee, some people in Indiana are probably going to have some nice new lawn furniture now.
So, like a hurricane. What happened to my car? Nobody knows. It's out in the swamp somewhere. But no, it's really, matter of fact, the guy upstairs, he says to me, hey, Chief, we got a leak up here. And I go, don't tell me, not the roof. He goes, no, it's coming like a dryer vent going out the side of the house or the side of the laundry room. The rain was coming so sideways, it was coming in the dryer vent. I mean, we're not talking about rain from the sky. We're talking about, you know, it absolutely was sideways.
That's what we get when we get a hurricane down here in Florida. We get the sideway rain.
Well, the Texas area's got nothing but water, and other places are total drought. I mean, this is crazy. I don't think it's all that unprecedented, but it's crazy.
But just remember, global climate change is a Chinese hoax.
Well, you know, the thing of it is, though, I'm not... Climate's shifting. They've sort of always shifted. I mean, I don't know. I can't blame it on a guy like Andrew, you know, running his gas lawnmower. I mean, I'm kind of rough to go with that, but... They showed pictures here last week of 1936. There was this big heat wave. Boy, talk about a different world. They had thousands of people laying out on the lakefront at night. And the guys are laying in their white shirts and ties on the sand. This is in the middle of the night. Those people dress like that, like kind of no matter what. And, but, I mean, all these records they're talking about, you know, we're supposedly breaking, they're all from, like, 1953. You know, so 53, I can only imagine my family living in that tiny little house, no air conditioning, probably not even a fan. I guess it had to be true love, or else hope nobody had a gun, huh? I mean, good Lord. Remember in Armin Hammer's book, when he talked about growing up in New York? You know, how old would he be, like 120 or something? And he was in the garment district. And said at night, the flat-roof buildings actually got hotter at night because there was no insulation, right? They would sleep on the fire escape. The kids got a stair, and the parents got the landing. And I'm sitting, how the hell can you, with the sirens and stuff going over New York every night, how do you sleep on a fire escape? But I guess it was better than inside. I mean, I'm thinking, for the grace of God, wasn't me, right? I mean, the parents, at least they got the landing, but the step, you know, it's kind of dangerous. You could fall off that. Anyway, we have Andrew. Andrew, are you with us? Or he mute might have...
I see him there, but...
He might have muted himself. We had a discussion earlier about this Fauci fiasco. And, I mentioned to you what I mentioned to Lou, is my friend last night was an attorney. He said he actually did some research on pardons in the Fifth Amendment way back in the day. He goes, I got to go read my stuff and I'll send it to you. He said, you know, these really aren't... The idea then was you got pardoned for a crime. There was something. There was a charge. There was a conviction. The idea that you give these blanket pardon, he goes, it's really more like a grant of immunity than it is a pardon.
Yeah.
And once you start confusing those two, all the other rules seem to get confused too, as well. I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not the lawyer here, but I mean, everything that's happening now seems to be turning our system of jurisprudence on its head. There's the pardons, the commutations, the clemency. It's a grab bag that people are just using, especially this administration, to look out for their cronies.
Well, I think that there's a, you know, I don't know if Rand Paul's the guy, but there, I mean, we've talked on the show a lot about, you know, just huge messes, sort of like Watergate, sort of like Iran-Contra. You got to pick one or two of them and drive them all the way home. Nobody seems to want to do that. And I think, what Biden did with Fauci is he kind of knew where this, maybe he didn't know or somebody knew that where this is going to lead, and just didn't want to go there. And now really, you know, Rand Paul's doing his thing, but now if Trump would come out tomorrow, like I just mentioned to Lou, and say, you know what, I'm behind this, and Rand Paul's going to be the special prosecutor, or he's going to be the Dan Inouye, and we're going to give him all the support in the world, we're going to follow this wherever it goes. I don't think Trump will ever do that, because someone's probably going to fall back on him. I mean, because he.
Oh, sure.
Because he went with some of the decisions, but I'm not saying in a bad way that he. But it's gonna. It's you know maybe there's gonna be, you know, Operation Warp Speed. Maybe there was influence there. Maybe there was CIA. Nobody wants it to go wherever it's gonna go. I mean, yeah. The fact that somebody can, you know, put you know Fauci on a skewer and make a name for themselves. They're willing to go there.
Yeah.
But the last
I'm somewhat biased when it comes to Rand Paul. I've had two encounters with him. One where he shoved me, actually, on Capitol Hill. And the other time I was talking to him. And you ever talk to somebody and they just look around and they walk away mid-conversation? Well, he did that, too. Yeah. So I don't know what his beef is.
Well, I mean, what is everybody's motivation? Is it... I mean, they really... They don't want him to take the fifth. It's great showmanship. But the last thing they want to do is for him to start naming names either, right? Do they?
I mean, probably. Is Andy on?
I don't know. Jimmy, is Andy on?
Appears to be.
Yeah.
He appears to be, but okay, well, I'll I heard a bit of what you and Lou were talking about. I did cover when I was in Washington the anthrax attacks through the postal system, and I discovered a lot of interesting facts about that. A CIA contractor, major one, Battelle Memorial Institute, they're in Ohio, was heavily involved in researching using the Miller the routing machines, the high pressure air, and these rollers in the postal service. There was a study there at Battelle. If we ran put anthrax in envelopes and ran them through the postal system, we could, you know, we could see anthrax being spread around the country. Now that study was done just prior to what we saw starting with the post office in Washington D.C. that serves the Congress. So there were a lot of questions about that. I was also tipped off by a source who said, look, yes, the anthrax was at one point in time at Fort Detrick, this U.S. AMRID that Lou was mentioning. That's where a lot of biological warfare studies take place up in Maryland, Frederick, Maryland. And he said, but you need to know that the anthrax itself came out of the Dugway Proving Grounds in Utah. So there you've got, that's an Army facility. Fort Detrick is a joint Pentagon operation, even though the Army supposedly is in control.
Hey, real stupid question. If you wanted to get some anthrax, do you have to find an animal that's infected, or can you sort of keep it and grow it on your own?
No, it's from infected animals. That's sort of like the biological petri dish, where it you know starts to germinate. And
so you can't just if you get a bunch, you can't just, you know, where they claim one place has the last few strains of small.
Once you have it, I think you can grow it, but original source has to be. Like, for example, the biggest problem with anthrax originally was the melting permafrost in Siberia, where you had these indigenous peoples who, you know, they herd reindeer and they keep some other domestic livestock, where the permafrost starts to melt, and then... these animals are grazing, and being infected. It might be a dead carcass in the permafrost, or feces in the permafrost. Then it starts to spread, and originally they were having huge anthrax outbreaks in the former Soviet Union, and of course then the Soviets said, hey. You know, based on the fact this thing can be a killer, let's weaponize it, which they did.
Yikes! That's not good.
By the way, same thing with, this was my original, and I still have some thought that this could have been the case. With melting glaciers, there are trapped in the ice pathogens, like influenza, for example. They're hundreds of thousands of years old. Modern humans have had no contact with this stuff. The glaciers are melting. It goes into the river system, and fish get infected. People eat the fish, whether it's sold in the wet market in Wuhan, China, for example. By the way, two major rivers that are fed by the melting Tibetan plateau converge at Wuhan.
Really? Well, hey, have you ever been to that area?
I have not been to. I've been to Beijing and Guangzhou in China, and of course Hong Kong. I've never been to the central part of China. It was always on my bucket list, but with the current situation, I doubt I'll get to see it. Some fantastic scenery.
They'll arrest your butt the minute you get there.
Yeah, I'd be more concerned about coming back here.
Well, what do you think this all lands with? The guy, Lou said he took the fifth on what color his tie was or something?
Yeah, well, that's he was doing the standard thing. So, well, once he would say, well, my tie, I don't know what color, my tie is blue, then the panel, the committee could say, well, you already answered right now. Why are you pleading the fifth on one thing? And you didn't plead the fifth on. So his lawyer, who basically, I don't know if you saw, his lawyer was ejected from the committee room.
Really?
Yes.
How do you do that?
Just trying to read a statement on behalf of his client. That happens all the time. I've been to many, many of these testimonies where you don't throw the guy's attorney out. I mean,
now, when you say you've been to these, what kind of, can anybody walk in, or do you need a special pass?
Yeah, if there's room. One of the things that I used to see was the higher monkey mucks who wanted to attend these hearings would pay these sitters who would come in like at 6 o'clock a.m. to get a place up in the front of the line. And I heard they made $40 an hour doing that. And then you know, the high monkey muck would come in take their place and get a fairly good seat in the committee room. I was with the press, so I stood in another line. They always had some seats reserved for the press. But if it's a big hearing, like I would assume the Fauci one was, because there was I guess a lot of the anti-vaxxers were present. It can get into an overflow situation. Sometimes they'll put you off in another room where you can watch it on a television, but in that case, you can watch it on C-SPAN at home.
Yeah, well, all this stuff is just, it's so amazingly interesting in the midst of we've got the war going on. That seems to be getting bigger and not smaller. Are we going to drag other people in? Where do you think Iran's getting all these missiles?
Well, we know that China has, according to some reports, sent them 400 to 600 of these shoulder-launched missiles, sort of like the Stingers that we had. Of course, they asked Trump about this, and Trump said, well, Xi told me they weren't doing that. So that's what he told me. I mean, Trump will believe Putin or Xi Jinping or Netanyahu over his own intelligence agencies.
Yeah, I don't quite. But I mean, you have to have the bigger ones, these ballistic ones that are going 1,000 miles an hour, 800 miles. You gotta put those on a ship, don't you, to get them there?
Oh, yeah. Well, on a ship or some of the short range missiles could probably be flown in on transports, fairly large transports.
Wouldn't somebody know, like us, if all of a sudden five huge transports left China and landed in Iran?
You would think so, but what I understand this guy Bill Pulte is doing at the DNI, where he's in charge of 17, 18 U.S. intelligence agencies, he's firing the sorts of people who monitor weapons flows. And,
why? What's the point of that?
You know, it's out of spite. And, you know, I wonder, having worked for the National Security Agency, been at the CIA a few times, worked in the Bureau of Diplomatic Security for the State Department. If we were suddenly taken over by Russia or China, this is exactly what would happen. Their puppet regime would start firing people in our intelligence agencies, in the intelligence community. So I just wonder about where their loyalties actually lie, going right up to Mr. Trump.
Yeah, it does seem a little bit, but he's still able to direct people's fury wherever he seems to want. You know, the fury at the Somalis is amazing. Not to say that, you know, that the guys that they're arrested aren't guilty. I'm sure they are, but it's just the whole idea of, you know, I mean, about what's, you know, what's the percentage, what's the number to every single whatever. I don't get it.
Yeah, he's very selective in his outrage when it comes to ethnic groups who may be involved in some sort of fraudulent activities. In Monmouth County, New Jersey, they've had for at least 20 years, the Hasidics have been caught ripping off, New Jersey state welfare, the federal government, all sorts of federal programs. I never hear Trump talk about that. He's very selective when he talks about Somalis and I guess also Hispanics.
Well, but you got to remember, they're eating the dogs and the cats.
And that too. Oh, that
too. I was, you know, kind of not jousting with Lou, but going back and forth on how sloppy the money seems to be with this. I mean, and I would not, you know, I actually would. You know, I think you know my personality. I don't mind taking one of these kind of weirdo issues, whatever it is. We could probably pick one of like 10 and driving it all the way home and finding out who actually is in charge of what and who's getting the dough. I mean, we could probably figure out whether, you know, the Fauci thing was the one we want to start at, or maybe it's some kind of welfare thing or some kind of defense thing or something. But someday, somewhere, you would think you got to follow one of these things and find out who's actually pushing all the influence around. But I don't think anybody ever wants to go that deep.
Especially remember during this pandemic, we had those grants and loans under the PPP initiative.
Yeah.
If they wanted to really find some fraud, you start looking at the people who got these loans and grants under the Trump administration. People were cleaning up. Somebody who had a small consulting business was getting grants and loans like they were a major manufacturer that had been somehow harmed by the pandemic.
I did a real lot of research on that because obviously we're a small firm.
Yeah.
And you know, I think I could probably name a bunch of places that sort of, quote, didn't deserve. You know,
yeah,
but that's not, you know, that's not quote the law, and with
right.
I'm not, you know, I never was a guy who, it could have been the first time really that I read a whole law. It had to do with that Employment Protection Act, whatever it was, EPA, where they paid the salaries of people if you kept them working.
Yeah,
and. And then there was another one, the one that came after that, that we could not apply for because the craziest part was if you were a, not legitimate, but if you were a business that you actually needed, like a bank or something, was it the word they used? If you were a business like that, that was a, that you actually needed, you know, I figure, I'll think of a word, but.
I know what you're talking about, too.
And you didn't have the same benefits as the people who weren't the important
an essential business.
Essential business. The non-essential business has got a better deal than the essential business.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, I'm saying you couldn't. Whoever wrote this.
But, you know, it was so bad. Matt Gaetz, who was a member of Congress at the time, got one of these grant. Well, I think he got a loan, but it was later forgiven for his law firm. Well, he's a sitting member of Congress who's not practicing law. Nevertheless, he got an office somewhere down in Florida that was his law firm, and he got a loan that was later forgiven for that.
Well, it was a two-step process for the first one. The second one was even more bizarre. But the second one, when I read it, I said, "Oh my God!" It took me three paragraphs, and I said, "Whoever wrote this damn thing, he had to be the lobbyist for the restaurant industry."
Yeah. Well, that's who. By the way, that's who usually writes these laws. It's the lobbyists.
Well, it had to do with if a part of your business was shut down. Now, in our business, we were an essential business. Plus we had the riots here. So for 2 years, the first year, we were the only people in the building. We came up the freight elevator because the front was boarded up. So we didn't have a client here in 2 years. I mean, plus the restaurants were closed. It was hard for me to go out and meet them. I could go to their house, I guess, but that was about. I mean, it was really a problem. But we weren't, quote, shut down. One or two nights, we have our backup facility is essentially my brother's house. But because we could actually take orders and we were never shut down, we weren't shut down. But if you were in the restaurant business, and say, for instance, your bar was shut down, that was considered a partial shutdown. So you were considered shut down. You might have been selling more pizzas out the back door than you ever did in your life, and actually had a record year, but you were partially shut down.
Right.
So this wasn't the Employment Act. This is the one after that. So I know a couple of restaurant people, and Ditka's got a huge check, the one in Oak Brook. This pizza place got two $350,000 checks, and they had their two best years ever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know one place out in Burr Ridge, the guy let him put a huge Butler building in the parking lot. So the restaurant was actually three times bigger than it normally was. And they had the heater out there and the fans and the whole thing going, the air conditioner. I'll bet the guy had his best year by a factor of two or three, but allegedly because the bar was shut down, he had a partial shutdown. Now, if you walked into the bar, it was basically butthole to elbow. It was never shut down. So I mean, the one of my biggest examples is not the lawyers, but the garbage truck guys. Waste management got $5 million here, or somebody did. Flood Brothers.
Oh.
You mean they never didn't pick up the garbage? They always got paid,
right?
But yet, they because of this, they're people. So I mean. It was a lot of this stuff. I mean, there's no crime there. That's the way it was written, right?
And that's why these members of Congress, after they leave, they stay in Washington because they become lobbyists, and these new members of Congress come in that don't know really anything about writing laws. Well, guess who's there? Oh, I can write that law for you on FEMA funding, for example. But these guys are working with major industries.
But Wayne, here's my question. I mean, there's always, when things are going good, especially in companies, things are always a little loose. Nobody cares if you have the $300 drink bill before the Sox game if you're taking people from the firm out and so forth.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody cares because you might care if it was 800, you might care. But by and large, business is good. Come on, let's act like it a little bit. And that's only human nature. But the thing that's kind of not human nature when it comes to governments, it seems, is when things aren't going so hot and we're actually broke, they don't stop. You would think, with our particular, I mean, most businesses go, hey, we had a crummy quarter. Let's not have the extra drink tonight or something. On the company, anyway, but these guys—they in the Trump group, and I'm not saying the Democrats have any different because they probably weren't, it's like they're not looking at the same numbers we're looking at. I mean, what are they looking at? I don't get.
I think they know what the situation is, but they're acting like it's not a problem because they don't want to give the impression that it's a problem. Whether we're talking about the economy or what we're just talking about earlier with, you know, public health situations. Washington, D.C. is...
Wait, I'm not going to fix your broken leg if I don't acknowledge the fact that you have a broken leg.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at what Dr. Oz, they're getting rid of the Part D, the Medicare prescription program. At the end of the year, they're going to make the announcement right around the time of the election how much people are going to be paying extra for prescriptions next year.
Well, that's okay, because both Biden and Trump made the drug companies cut that way down on their prices.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. They didn't really do that, did they? No.
They didn't really do that, no. So, these people, it's like they want to commit political suicide unless their thinking is, well, there's not really going to be an election because we're not going to have one, and we're going to feign some reason not to have it. So, you know.
Well, what, in regards to the drug situation and whatever, they just can't seem to get this stuff down. I mean, I unfortunately had, well, a couple of them didn't make it, so I guess I'm not all over the chemo thing as I was a few months ago, but literally there's chemotherapy treatments here that are $50,000 a pop. In other countries, they're like $2,000.
Yeah, and they just announced they may have a vaccine for pancreatic cancer. I've known people once you're told you have that, you don't have much longer on this mortal coil.
But this whole idea that these massive amounts of overhead, I mean, what would you do, my favorite place to take an example of, what would you do if all of a sudden, I mean, I don't even know what the situation is, because somewhere between the accreditation and the funding, it's almost impossible to compete in that environment. And you basically have put most of your independent doctors out of business. I mean, does anybody even have an independent doctor anymore? They're all part of some group, and you have to do what the group says. You got to see a certain amount of people a certain amount of time. And the whole medical group, the ability of us to do stuff on specific diseases and do miracle surgeries and stuff has never been greater. But I'm going to say the care has never been crappier. And there's a difference. Yeah. And there is a difference.
Yeah.
I mean, you're lucky because you actually have... When you go to the veterans place, you probably can see a guy. Well, you're lucky.
It takes a while sometimes now, longer than it did before. I got to say, when Biden was president, I really thought the VA was absolutely the best I've ever seen it. And now it's gone back to what it used to be like, waiting 7 months to see a dermatologist. And I had melanoma. And it's a checkup to make sure there's no additional melanoma.
Yeah.
I think that's important. The VA now obviously doesn't think it's that important.
Well, we got a day for a break. SP Futures up 47. NASDAQ Futures up 403. We're trying to make up for yesterday. When we come back, we're talking a little about this interesting. We've been talking about the split in the high tech. Well, nothing is more evident than today, where Meta and earnings is down $60, 10%, and Microsoft is up 36, up 9%. So we're seeing this big shoot up and down in this area, and it's, I tell you what, it's interesting if you're trading it. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are.
Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
We're back.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Jimmy on the board. S&P futures up 45. The NASDAQ futures up 398. We're trying to make up for yesterday. U.S. economy slowed to a 1.5% growth rate in quarter two. June core inflation at 3.3%. Well, that's not good. Neither one of those numbers are good, but we seem to like it today. We're with the Dow. Okay, the Dow's up 268. That's up a quarter of what it was down yesterday. S&P's up 51. That's up roughly maybe 45%. NASDAQ's up probably a third of what it was, or almost all of what it was done yesterday. So we're bouncing here. So that's a good thing. Yesterday was pretty bad. In Asia, we got the Nikkei up 433.7%. Hang Seng up 50.2%, Shanghai down 23.6%. So again, we're getting the Hang Seng and the Shanghai going kind of different directions. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 56.2%, FTSE up 40.4%, CAC around up 87, that's a full 1%. Bonds up another 5 basis points, 4.67. This long-term rates are just keep creeping here, and the market is trying to fight that, and it's not doing a very good job. Oil down 53 cents, but still 83.93, way over 80, well, 84, say 84. RBOB 333, down 5 cents, but still pretty high. Gold is moving up today. It's 4,076, up 40 bucks. Silver up 33 cents, 58.42. Foreign exchange, dollar is 114.78, so it's actually down a little the last couple of days, but still pretty strong. British pound 133. The yen has actually come up a little bit. It's 162.82. It was over 163. Now that's yen per dollar. Keep remembering that. Crypto up $1,000, 64,825. It's been kind of in this spot for a while now. Jimmy, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Well, it is the start of Lollapalooza. It is July 30th. It is 7:37. On the inbound Kennedy, we have 20 minutes. The inbound Eden is 34. Inbound Eisenhower 31, and the inbound Dan Ryan is at 21. And weather today, we are going to be hot and hazy with a high of 84. We are currently at 70. There could be some wildfire smoke in the air. That's in Chicago. In Phoenix, it's 90 degrees and will be a high of 114. In sports, Sox win, Cubs lose. And that's all. Back to you, Chief.
Do we ever get Andrew to unmute himself?
Yeah, I think so. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Okay, there he is.
Did somebody creep in from the administration and mute you?
Well, we had what they call technical difficulties where I was able to hear you, including the very interesting segment with Lou that began the show today, but I got an alert. Security concerns on your driver on the microphone, so we all have to be our own engineer unless we're there with Jimmy in the studio. So,
well, you do understand that on my LinkedIn account, which I don't even have a whole one. I just have a, because if I ever said anything over there, FINRA considers that communication to clients, right? I mean, how crazy is that? I look at the people that have searched for me. One of them was an analyst from the Department of War. Is that because of Wayne?
I won't touch that.
I'm sitting there, some guy from the Department of War, not defense, Department of War, and I'm going, wait a minute. I think it's got to be either Jimmy or Wayne, one of the two.
Well, the funny thing is, let me try to pick the words accurately but carefully, is Wayne has many relationships, and he's actually been on, I tried to count them up, all but one of the 15 major TV broadcast news networks and cable networks as a security analyst, invited on air to opine. So who knows why they were looking for him?
Unbelievable. All right. So what do you make of? Let's do a little bit about the Fed. What do you think about the new Fed chair? And the guy, when the announcement came out, because there had been some hot rumor beforehand, they were actually going to raise rates. And when they came out and kept them steady, the NASDAQ futures, the NQs, were down, you know, 2-something, and all of a sudden they came back and actually were positive for a nanosecond. And then the chairman started talking, and they finished on their low of the day. The guy's pounding about how he's gonna really take care of this inflation, but I mean they're really not doing anything, and I don't think there's anything that the administration wants them to do. I mean, they don't want them to tighten the money growth. I mean, they don't seem to be. I mean, we all know what you have to do to stop inflation, and they're not going to do any of those things. So you're starting to see, you're continuing to see these long-term rates creep. 10, 30 years over 5.2 now, and the 10 years, 4.68. Doesn't seem like much, but it's kind of a relentless creep here. It used to be 4.5 was the danger signal in the 10, and 5 was a danger signal in the 30. Well, we're kind of through those a little bit. And, that's a problem going forward, considering our deficit and considering how we're certainly dependent on other countries investing here to pick up these bonds, and we don't seem to care about that. Seems like a lot of stuff is kind of not together. Maybe there is a master plan. I don't know. But on the money side, it seems like, I mean, it's not together. What do you think? I mean, we've got the new chairman, and I actually think the guy's pretty much a conservative dude, and I don't really have a problem with him. I don't think he can do what he wants to do. Do you?
Well, you're doing the deep data analysis. Let me do a superficial one. In keeping with the name of the show, Stocks and Jocks, I think this is a punt situation, or to take another analogy, a honeymoon situation, where people thought, well, he's brought in to lower interest rates. He can't really do that. Let's give him a honeymoon here for the time being, and let the decisions be punted, so he doesn't have to make any really tough decisions his first session here. Although when he was appointed, I think the president said, when they asked a question, well, suppose he has to raise rates, the president at that point in time, and at least in one quote, said, well, that's okay, or he does what he has to do. But that could change, because we know he's not.
Well, last week
to raise rates.
Last week he said that the guys that are, there's some people on the board that are not just agreeable, they're like divisive or something, was his quote. What the hell was it? There's so many quotes, it's hard to, I always pick up on the ones having to do with the Fed, because that's what I always watch. But I mean, you got to dig through all the X things to find it. But we know what has to happen if he's going to fight inflation, and I don't think he can come close to doing that. Do you? Can you?
Well, the powers are limited because, for one thing, he's, as you and virtually all your listeners would know, it's not omnipotence. He's got to work with the existing board.
And Jerome Powell is still on that board, is he not?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But he didn't vote against it, though. Three guys who voted to go higher were, I think it was Kashkari and two other guys. If you want to control inflation, you stop the growth of the money supply. You stop buying stuff and putting it on the balance sheet. Maybe you raise the reserve requirement in the bank from 0 to 10%, and possibly you've had margin loans increase in stock margin loans are up $200 billion in 3 months. That's 20% of the total. It's never happened before. So you could say instead of putting 50% down on initial stock buy, you could put 60. That's a Fed call, or 55. I'm not saying 100, but if you were serious, this is what you would do. And every one of them would have some huge cataclysmic problem with the markets and maybe housing prices, so they don't want to do it. But I mean, it's clear as day what you would have to do to actually pull inflation into check. You don't keep increasing the money supply by. In fact, they have the numbers right here from the numbers that just came out this particular month. Actually, the rate of growth dropped a little bit in June. Of course, we're a month behind. That was a Biden thing. We can't handle the truth. We can't get it weekly, right? But the May to June number, March to June number is 5.2%. The April to June number is 9.4. I'm sorry. May to June is 5.2. April to June is 9.4. March to June is 8.5. So let's say we're pushing along. If you take the three-month number, even be nice and say it's 6 or 7% growth in the money supply, that's trying for inflation. That's not fighting inflation. You know, I mean, how do you have inflation of a target of 2% when you're growing the money supply 6 or 7 or 8? I mean, it's not possible. Even if you decide you like new economics, there are no such things as new economics when it comes to that. So I mean, what do they do? I mean, they're acting like the Confederacy in the Civil War, and not like the Union. And the Union won, by the way.
Well, I'm going to boil down.
Some people down here would disagree, but
yeah.
Oh, I'm glad to get that point in. Well, I'm going to make up a new slogan, boiling down an old one. And my new slogan is, "There is no tomorrow."
Oh God!
And that comes from people acting like there is no tomorrow. And I just thought of it now. There is no tomorrow.
One of our contributors to the show has been watching the Ken Burns thing on Vietnam, and I haven't had a chance to see that yet. I heard it's supposed to be pretty good. He goes, it's almost day per day what we're doing over in Iran. You know, we do this, and all of a sudden they react back harder than we thought. They don't fold, and then we try something harder, and then they don't fold, and then it's always we're reacting to,
and we're lying about our own casualties, which occurred during Vietnam.
Yeah, have I ever told you? Actually, the lady who lived upstairs actually met a guy, and the guy was basically all messed up. I've told you a story. She worked at Walmart for a while when she was real young. Now she's an engineer for a company that makes all the little boxes for like Big Macs and stuff. They make a fortune. It's a huge industry. People that make the little stuff for all these fast food places. And she's working at Walmart, and there's this guy who just did his job and didn't talk to anybody. And of course, this lady is very nice, and she's not going to let anybody not talk to anybody at lunch. I mean, she's kind of one of those, which is, you know, good for her. So the guy's sitting out by himself. She goes over and sits down, and the guy didn't really want to talk to her. But finally, after a couple of days, he warms up. He was a guy that in Vietnam, they would send him out in the field after the battle to try and put arms and legs together to come up with the body counts, even though they were all dismembered. And I go, she goes, God, no wonder you don't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, what a job that was. And we got talked into that on some hill that nobody even knew about. It's all right, 20 of our guys died, but 100 of their guys died. And we bought that for a while.
Yeah, and remember, it was every night on the news, the network news. You'd get Walter Cronkite or somebody, Huntley and Brinkley, and casualty numbers according to MACV, Military Assistance Command Vietnam. And if you remember the movie Good Morning Vietnam,
yep.
These were just... These were the psychological operations people that were putting out all these this phony information that was unfortunately swallowed up by our networks.
Yeah, no, and us. I mean, we had to go to bed every night thinking we were winning. I mean, it was Robert McNamara. What happened to him? He was one of the original Whiz kids. He came out of Ford, didn't he? Wasn't he the chairman of Ford or his vice chairman?
Yeah.
And he ended up, he was one of the guys that was all over this, we can fine-tune the economy by Keynesian raising taxes and this and that and going against. He was a big precursor of that, and that didn't work. And somehow or another, he got stuck in the Defense Department, and boy, I'm going to say he was the Hegseth of his time. I mean, he wasn't as obnoxious, but he was every bit as incapable in that department, wasn't he?
Well, afterwards, he really had problems realizing what he had done. Of course, for himself, he was kicked over to be the president of the World Bank, so he wasn't having money problems. But apparently, he did have a lot of psychological problems after that.
What do you guys make of this gyrations going on in the market? I know but everybody sort of has to watch it. I mean, because it's on TV every day, and the amount of money that's being poured into this AI, and now you have this tremendous, diversification within the big stocks. I mean, today, it's been happening a while, so it's not a big surprise to me, but Microsoft has got to be up $50 in the last 2 weeks, while some of these other guys, the Microns of the world, they were 1,200, now they're 785, even though they're up 46 today. Meta, shot themselves in the foot with their earnings. They're down 10%. It seems like now the people that have put the huge investments in, people are looking at it and going, I don't know about that. Not everyone. And then,
about it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
That ultimately it's an amazing technology capabilities growing all the time with its utility, but somebody's got to make money at some point out of it. And if we pull out the world's tiniest violin to find the victims, what do we find this week? But poor little Mark Zuckerberg is talking about the big boys are controlling, and it's so unfair because what's happening to Meta, because the small fry like him are having problems.
It's a tough one,
And I'm wondering about Trump saying he's getting 10% of these companies. Is that him or is it the government? How does that work? Isn't that a state capitalistic system, sort of like what we saw with Mussolini and Franco? And
you would think.
And,
sometimes called socialism,
or communism in some.
And Lou's the one who brought this up. I mean, listeners can't accuse me of this. It's actually a very fascist system.
Yes.
Because when I use that term, I'm not talking about putting people in railroad cars or killing people. I'm talking about the German way, even before there was fascism. They like having, I'm not criticizing. I'm saying they like having three or four companies in every industry with their nose firmly up the ass of government. They liked the fact that the banks were really the control people. When I was lecturing over there in the early 90s, the banks owned 70, 80, 85% of the stock of a lot of the big companies. So the government controlled the banks, and the banks owned a lot of the companies. It's not the American way, at least it didn't used to be. We never did anything like that. I mean, you can point to, if you're a big Trump supporter, you can point to, Chrysler. But if you're going to say crap like that, you really need to read the detail. And the detail was, what was the guy's name at Chrysler?
Lee Iacocca.
Yeah,
that was a loan, though, was it not?
Yeah, but he also spent, I remember reading his book, how many months or weeks and how many pairs of shoes he wore out going to Congress trying to talk people into this, and they wanted kind of no part of it. And finally, when they did, it was a loan, and they couldn't wait to pay it back, and they got their money out of it. I mean, it's nothing like the design now, where we're actually going to take part of the thing going forward and keeping it. It's not even close. I mean, it literally was a bailout that people had real misgivings about, and it was over as fast as it could, right? It's nothing, right. It's nowhere near the design, whatever the design is we're going now, in my opinion.
I agree. It's not even during the days of the robber barons in this country. I don't think you can say, hey, you know, William McKinley just got a piece of, the Carnegie's operation, or, J.P. Morgan. That didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen. I mean, who was the guy? Who was one of the biggest sleaze bags that ever lived? He was involved in every single railroad at one time or another. He like bought
Vanderbilt.
Solo.
Vanderbilt.
No, it was
Astor.
Oh, you're
no,
talking
Astor
about,
was I, Fur.
No, I'm talking about the guy. Go ahead.
Are you talking about Gould during?
Yeah, Jay Gould.
Yes.
He should be the hero of every finance guy. could there ever have been a bigger sleaze bag? And yet the guy, he owned every railroad like two or three times, didn't he?
Yeah, and that. That was sort of the downfall of Ulysses Grant, tying in with that guy.
Man, he was busy back in the day when it was hard to be busy. I mean, even if you wanted to go buy the Rock Island, you had to at least go from New York to Chicago. It was not that easy to do without fax machines or telephones or anything. I mean, those guys worked hard. Without going too crazy here, where is the status of this thing in Iran? I'm looking at it. I don't even have an opinion now. I just look at it and I'm going, what are we doing here? Last week we declassified four deaths as saying they're not Iranian war deaths because they happened during the truce. What is that all about?
And then he's comparing the dead in the Iran conflict to past wars, like it's a it's a sport for him. It makes no sense. He's looking at members of the military as commodities.
Yeah.
That he can transact on. I mean, it's.
Where do you think they're? In other words, how can anybody? Let's give him some credit. Whatever. Just say, how can he stop it right now? I mean, what are we? Is it getting too big? Is the brush fire too big here? I don't know. What is it?
He's out of options. He can bounce back between a few pseudo options. And when I say he's out of options, what do you mean he? We.
Yeah.
The United States. And many people who have a lot of credibility say the war has been lost.
Well, yeah, but it's not over. I mean, it's nowhere near law. I mean, it's ongoing.
Well, it's ongoing, but the basic options, as I understand it, are you send in ground troops, you keep bombing, or you work out a deal. And all three of those options are very, very bad. And you and sending in ground troops, talk about 18 reported deaths. You're talking about a country of 93 million.
And the war is spreading. For example, I think it was the day before yesterday, either Iran or their Houthi allies in Yemen hit a U.S.-owned ship in Egypt. Okay,
well,
so
let's cut back to the one we'd like to see happen, some sort of a negotiation. Do we even know who's in charge?
Well, we had one. Remember 3 or 4 weeks ago?
Yep.
We had a memorandum of understanding that basically solved the war. And President Trump literally signed it. And and it looked like that was the option. And what happened was when when people actually saw it, they said, this is far from U.S. getting this unconditional surrender of Iran. The U.S. has basically surrendered, and here's the peace deal. Here's the memorandum of understanding signed by the president and announced. And when that started to penetrate the consciousness of the American public, they said, well, it's not a peace deal. It's not a negotiation. Well, We're going to go back to war.
Who blew it up? Was it the Israelis, us, or was it or people in the Iran that didn't agree with it in the first place? I mean, it seems like there's a couple of groups over there, right?
Well, they basically liked it and agreed with it. And like any big country, there's in their case, dissenters are ultra hawks who like more war. But what passes for their leadership at this point signed it and liked it because it basically gave them what they want.
But wasn't there some rumor that they were okay with it and somebody else down the line who didn't agree with it over there, they're the ones that started it up again?
No, I think it was on our side, with our side, including our friend, Mr. Netanyahu, didn't like it because it was basically, in effect, capitulation to Iran.
Well, I know they. Well, I heard they didn't like it. I guess I'm not so sure how much further this can roll without markets and all other things, allies and everybody else getting to the point of no return. Right? I just hope that somehow or another these guys pull this off and it ends soon. Right? Is there any chance of that?
I just wrote an article on one thing that Trump has succeeded in doing is he has triggered off nuclear proliferation to a level not seen since probably just after World War II. Countries you would not think would want a nuclear weapon are seeking one because the post-World War II security system has collapsed largely due to Trump, assisted, of course, by Putin and what he's doing in Ukraine and his threats. So I think in the next 10 years, we could see 15 more nuclear countries.
Now, when you say we got a dash here, guys, but when you say that, we'll talk about it next week. When you say that, do you have a working bomb? Do you have a dirty bomb? Do you have a plane? Do you have a rocket? Do you have the ability to deliver? I mean, there's a lot of levels to this.
Yeah, and with AI and supercomputing, you can do a lot of the testing that used to entail setting one off. You can do it on a computer and know you've got a fairly workable bomb, yeah.
Well, as long as you keep it on a computer, I guess it's okay.
You know. That's not the intent.
Yeah. All right, guys, take care of yourself. Have a good weekend. SP Futures up 51, NASDAQ Futures up 485. Very interesting market today. We'll talk all about it tomorrow. Back tomorrow. Jimmy, good job. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.